All right, so we're diving deep today into a Florida Supreme Court case, Gutierrez v. Vargas. It deals with expert testimony in medical malpractice cases, specifically how the court drew a line between a treating physician and like a retained expert witness.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating case when you really start to think about all the implications.
Absolutely, and we're going to unpack all of that today. The case itself involved a real-world consequence, a delayed diagnosis, and we'll see how that played out in court all the way up to the highest court in Florida. And we've got a lot to cover. The procedural history, the central legal questions, even those dissenting opinions.
Right, it's a dense one.
Yeah, but the mission here is to break it down for you, find those aha moments and explain why this ruling actually matters for anyone studying law, especially when it comes to understanding evidence in legal cases.
It is a good example of, you know, how a case can kind of snowball. You know, it starts as this question about medical malpractice, a specific diagnosis in a child, and it ends up shaping the whole legal landscape around expert testimony.
Exactly. And that's what makes it so interesting. So let's start with the human element here, because that's really where this all begins. We have Monica Gutierrez, and she was a patient of Dr. Vargas for 6 years. Dr. Vargas was her pediatrician. The core of the issue is this claim that Dr. Vargas failed to diagnose Monica with C1Q nephropathy, which is a chronic kidney disease.
Yeah, a serious condition for sure.
Absolutely. Now, Dr. Vargas argued that Monica actually had MPGN, which is an acute condition, and her argument was that it couldn't have been diagnosed any earlier than it was.
Right, two very different diagnoses with very different implications for treatment.
And this difference in diagnosis had major consequences for Monica because at just 7 years old, she ended up needing a kidney transplant.
Wow.
Yeah, so this case, it went to trial and initially resulted in a $4.1 million verdict in favor of Monica.
That's significant.
It is. But then it gets even more interesting because it becomes this huge battle over the rules of expert testimony.
Right, a procedural issue that ended up having huge substantive implications.
Yeah, so here's where things get really fascinating. The trial court, they had this pretrial order in place that said each side was limited to one retained expert witness per medical specialty.
It's pretty standard practice.
It is. But here's the catch at trial. Four pathologists actually testified for Monica's side.
Okay, so that seems like a pretty clear violation of the pretrial order.
And that's exactly what the Third District Court of Appeal thought. They ended up overturning that initial verdict because they said it violated that one expert per specialty rule. But as we know, the Florida Supreme Court had a very different take on this whole situation.
Right. And that's where the case gets really important from a legal precedent standpoint.
Exactly. So the Supreme Court did something pretty crucial here. They drew a very specific distinction between what they called retained experts and treating physicians.
Right. And that distinction is at the heart of this whole case.
It really is. And this is key for everyone listening who's studying law. The court basically said treating physicians, they're allowed to testify about their own medical involvement in a patient's care. This includes, you know, any diagnoses they made and opinions they formed while they were actually treating the patient.
So they're not automatically considered expert witnesses in the same way as someone who's hired specifically for their outside expert opinion.
Exactly. And that's a really important distinction to make. So let's break down the four key points the Supreme Court identified that really solidified this distinction. First, we have something called treatment participation.
Okay, what does that mean exactly?
So the court said even pathologists who didn't have like direct clinical interaction with a patient in person, but who analyzed, say, biopsy results as part of the patient's medical care team, they could still be considered treating physicians.
Interesting. So it's not just about whether you saw the patient face to face.
Exactly. The location of the treatment isn't the only thing that matters.
Makes sense. Especially in today's world where so much of medicine is collaborative and specialized.
Right. And then the second point is testimony scope. The court said that treating physicians, their testimony has to be limited to observations they made and conclusions they reached while they were treating the patient.
So no brand new opinions formed after the fact.
Right. It has to be grounded in their actual experience treating the patient. And then third, there's opinion formation timing. Here, the Supreme Court asked, did the doctors base their testimony on evidence that wasn't available at the time they were treating the patient?
So like if they were looking back at medical records years later and forming new opinions, that might be different.
Exactly. If new information is being used, that starts to look more like expert testimony, not a treating physician's firsthand account. And finally, the fourth point is the target of testimony. The court was really interested in whether the doctor was basically critiquing their own work or the work of another physician.
So if a treating physician is explaining their own decisions and actions, that's one thing. But if they're brought in to critique another doctor's work, that's more like what a retained expert would do.
Exactly. Now let's apply all of this back to the Gutierrez case. We had Dr. Cohen, who was the retained expert for Monica's family.
So he was brought in specifically to provide an expert opinion.
Right. His role was likely to offer an opinion on whether Dr. Vargas met the accepted standard of care. On the other hand, we had Drs. Pardo and Ruiz, the pathologists. They analyzed Monica's biopsies while she was under Dr. Vargas's care.
So they were part of the treatment team, even if they didn't directly interact with Monica.
Exactly. And that's why the court considered them treating physicians, not retained experts. This allowed their testimony despite the one expert per specialty rule. And then there's another wrinkle. A rebuttal expert, Dr. Croker, was also allowed to testify.
A rebuttal expert? Why was that?
Well, the court said his testimony was okay because it addressed new evidence that came up during the trial. It wasn't just a repeat of what Dr. Cohen had already said.
Okay, so he was responding to new information, not just bolstering the existing expert testimony.
Exactly. Now, this is where the dissenting opinions come in. Justices Kennedy and Polston, they didn't necessarily disagree with the majority's opinion on the whole expert testimony issue.
They had a different concern.
Yeah, they were more focused on whether the Supreme Court actually had the authority to hear this case in the first place. Justice Kennedy argued that there wasn't a direct conflict with other rulings from different district courts of appeal, which is usually needed for the Supreme Court to step in. He pointed to another case, Cantor, which dealt with subsequent treating physicians. These are doctors who come in after the alleged malpractice has already occurred.
So he's saying Cantor is about a different legal issue than Gutierrez, which focused on the distinction between initial treating physicians and retained experts.
Right. Justice Polston agreed, basically saying that Vargas and Cantor were analyzing different things. So for them, it was more about the Supreme Court potentially overstepping its boundaries.
So it's a procedural argument, not a disagreement on the substance of the expert testimony rule itself.
Exactly. So what does this all mean for those listening? Well, the court's decision in Gutierrez gives trial courts a lot more leeway in deciding how to classify medical witnesses. The definition of a treating physician is broader now in Florida. It can include specialists who are part of the care team, even if they're not the primary doctor or don't have direct patient contact. This has big implications for trial strategy.
Yeah, now it's even more important to clearly define everyone's role in pretrial orders and make sure you're not running afoul of any rules.
Absolutely. And while some people see this as a win for plaintiffs because it might allow more medical evidence to be admitted without the strict expert witness limitations, others worry about the potential for what some call stealth experts.
Right. You could have treating physicians who end up giving testimony that's more like expert opinion without going through the usual procedures.
Exactly. It definitely highlights this tension that exists in medical malpractice cases around how expert knowledge is presented in court.
It makes you think about the bigger picture of how medical care is delivered these days. It's often a team effort, so those old distinctions between treating physicians and outside experts are getting blurrier.
And the legal system has to adapt to that.
Absolutely.
So this deep dive into Gutierrez v. Vargas shows how medical facts, legal procedure, and trial strategy all intersect in these kinds of cases. The case really emphasizes how important it is to understand the subtleties of expert testimony and how courts differentiate between those directly involved in patient care and those brought in for opinions. And it leaves us with this. As you continue your legal studies, think about how Gutierrez might affect how medical evidence is presented and challenged in future cases. Could a specialist you encounter in a case be considered a treating physician under this new, broader definition? This case suggests that the answer is more complicated than it might seem at first glance, and that's something worth really thinking about.
Yeah, it's a case that raises a lot of important questions, and it shows how legal precedents are set. You take a specific set of facts and apply legal principles to them. But then the implications can go far beyond that one case.
Absolutely. It's a great example of how the law constantly evolves to address new situations and challenges. And for anyone interested in law, it's a reminder that understanding both the substance of the law and the procedures that govern it is absolutely essential.
I think that's a perfect note to end on. This case is definitely one that law students and legal professionals should have on their radar.
Agreed. Well, that's all the time we have for our deep dive into Gutierrez v. Vargas today. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for having me.